Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. If polygamy were legalized today, how would that affect family law? I'm excited to have a constitutional scholar on the show, Dr. Sally Gordon, and she says if polygamy were legalized, it would create a bunch of legal problems. So we'll talk about more in our next conversation. Check it out. I've heard that if they put a lawsuit to get rid of polygamy today, it wouldn't be as successful as it was in 1890. Do you agree with that?
Oh, well, so one thing that we should say is that the federal government harmed the church deeply, confiscating property, imprisoning polygamists, but it was the saints who got rid of polygamy, mm-hmm. not the government. You're right. So they were not headed in a good direction. That's true. But it was Wilford Woodruff who, in the First Manifesto, directed members of the church to obey the law. Not there was no sort of formal capitulation of everybody. So one thing to remember is that the Latter-day Saints have changed. They didn't change on a dime in 1890, but they are deeply opposed to polygamy now. So very deeply. So it would not be the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints who would bring that case today. So there wouldn't be a recreation of Reynolds.
Well, so there was a case within the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Cody Brown brought a case because when Utah became a state, of course, the Constitution, the federal government said you've got to ban polygamy. So we're the only state in the Union that specifically bans polygamy. And I know there was a case where, I want to say a federal judge struck it down, but then another one reinstated it.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give us more details on that?
Sure, I'd be happy to. But I think one of the things to remember is that, and I think that the Latter-day Saints often say, you know, our religion is based on family. But it's also true to say that marriage is the foundation of most of our social structure, and many, many thousands of laws are built around marriage. All kind, employment, benefits of all kinds, just deep, deep protections for marriage, thousands and thousands and thousands of laws. And when you got married, Rick, you probably didn't feel all those laws settling on your head. But they were. I promise you they were. And I tell my law students, you know, just be careful, right? Because you can get in voluntarily, but you can't get out voluntarily. You have to go to the government. You can't just walk away. So marriage is very important, highly regulated, and deeply valuable to the society. So when, for example, we think about interracial marriage beginning in the 1960s with the Supreme Court saying it's unconstitutional to maintain what are called miscegenation statutes, meaning statutes that ban interracial marriage, it was easy to fold those people into the system because everything is built for two people. It's easy. And in that sense, same-sex marriage is easy, too. It's the same system. The divorce works the same. Inheritance works the same. All those benefits, Social Security, everything fits with two people. If you're going to bust that open, that's a much, much bigger change than the two big constitutional changes we've seen in marriage. Interracial marriage and same-sex marriage. Those aren't complicated as a matter of the functioning of bureaucracy at state or federal levels. So that's one thing I just want to...
That's interesting.
Yeah, so it's very, very difficult. I will say that even in a case that was decided shortly after World War II that involved something called the Mann Act, which was passed in 1910 and forbade bringing women across state lines for immoral purposes. It was often called the White Slavery Act, and it was to try to prevent people bringing, say, Chinese women to the U.S. To become prostitutes, or women from Europe to become prostitutes. But a case was brought against a Mormon man in the mid-1940s for crossing state lines with two women, both of whom he had sexual relationships with. They were married to each other. And the question became, would this count as transporting women across state lines for an immoral purpose? And the Supreme Court said yes.
Oh.
Yes, they did. Justice William Douglas, who was a bit of a cowboy himself, but there was a very thoughtful dissent by the Catholic justice, Frank Murphy, who said this is one well-recognized form of marriage around the world. And I went and checked anthropological studies from that era. About 80% of societies had polygyny of one or another kind. Polyandry, a woman marrying more than one man, I was really interested to find that one. But it didn't turn out very well because it was in societies where a man was too poor to buy a wife. He'd band together, say, with three brothers and buy some woman who would die early and very painfully. Right? So it was not the sort of women rule setup that you might think would happen. But so one of the things is that polygamy was by far the traditional form of marriage. But the entire globe had been becoming significantly more monogamous. And in the 20th century, monogamy expanded by leaps and bounds. So we really have a very strong trend toward monogamy. And there are good reasons for it. Many more children is one. Right? If you study polygamy, if you look at those polygamists, you know, the first wife would have 9 kids, and the second wife, 5. And you get down to the, you know, when he's 50 and he marries the 19-year-old, it's 2. So women would have more children in monogamous relationships. So it's a better way to have a population grow fast, if that's what you want to do.
Which is funny, because that's what, in DNC 132, that was one of the purposes was to raise up seed.
To build up a righteous seed, right? And only for men who had earned it, because lots of men weren't worthy. And so that's one way to think about it. But when you really look at the numbers, monogamy builds more people. Maybe that's a bad thing in a world that has, you know, probably several billion too many people. But so thinking about it, thinking about how much society is built around thinking of families as having people who are married only to one other person, and that we encourage childbirth. We don't. France pays you to do it. That doesn't happen in the U.S., but we still have a relatively high birth rate for a developed country. And, of course, Utah is a star. I think that the Orthodox Jews outpace you a bit at this point. But really, so you can see why it makes some sense for a society that wants a growing population, a capitalist society, right? You need more people to keep the market growing. And for one that has built lots of rules around couples. So the idea that we would switch now, especially when the practice of polygamy is connected in so many people's minds with something that Mormons left behind a long time ago. The people, I think, there are some fundamentalist groups, very, very small, but there are also polyamorists. And various, you know, sort of charismatic religious leaders who collect harems, women as well as men. My sense right now is that there's not a strong enough movement for this, and that it would be deeply troublesome to the Latter-day Saints to have this rise now, especially with people who say they're fundamentalist Mormons. The church administrators and active members that I talk to dread that, and they feel very strongly that while they understand what happened in the 19th century, they no longer live there, and they don't want it. They want to, you know, lead loving family lives, and they're not looking to stir that. Well, I was going to say beehive, but I shouldn't say beehive, should I? That they don't want to open that Pandora's box.
Well, can you comment more on the Cody Brown case?
Oh, sure.
Because I know, and let me just throw this out here. You know, are you familiar with Lindsay Hansen Park?
I'm not.
Okay, so she has a podcast called Year of Polygamy.
Oh.
And she has interviewed hundreds of fundamentalist Mormons from many different points of view. One of her big concerns is, she says, especially here in Utah, because the mainstream LDS church shuns polygamy so much, it puts the polygamist kind of in the dark, it allows people like Warren Jeffs to abuse the system. And so she has actually tried to get some legislation to decriminalize polygamy, because she feels like if they're not so hidden, then it's going to make it much harder for people like Warren.
It's like legalizing marijuana,
right,
for example. You pull the fangs.
Or even all drugs. I believe it was it Belgium that legalized all drugs and their drug use went down?
You know, there are arguments to be made for that. Yes, and I think so. One of the things that's different about the many fundamentalist Mormons, I don't want to typecast too much, is that they tend to be pretty isolated, and
right,
isolation breeds abuse.
Right.
So that's absolutely true. I'm not a social engineer. I don't know whether it would work. I do know that it's always more complicated. I know women who are desperately lonely at age 80 and would be happy to band together with group, you know. My sense of those people is that they're able to do that now. It's when you want to call it a marriage that you start, right, and have all those laws settle on you, you tend to get in trouble. So one of the things I'm not quite clear about is whether marriage is the important thing in the equation. Certainly we saw for marriage equality in the LGBTQ+ community, that made an enormous difference. People could not get access, say, to a partner who was dying in an intensive care ward, and since they weren't a spouse, they couldn't see them. Or if they had adopted a child and the other spouse died, they would not automatically have parentship of those children, or they couldn't put their finances together. Not that there's such great breaks in the tax code for married people, but still, you could see how horrible that would be. But the hard part is that we isolate people, we make them lonely, we tell them they're bad people, and yes, that does produce abuse. I think the added complexity in Utah is that they claim to be the only true inheritors of the Mormon position, and that's going to be really hard to work your way around. I'm not sure decriminalizing would be a satisfactory answer for that.
Because that's more of a theological question.
theological, cultural.
Yeah,
I mean, I think, I do think, you know, I admire the attorneys general who say, unless there's abuse, we're really not all that interested in just punishing people for practicing a lifestyle, if you will, that has multiple sexual relationships when half the college kids are doing at least worse than that, right? So I do feel like, you know, we don't want to be hypocritical, but there's a level of approval that goes along with marriage, and a level of social endorsement. We just have to be careful how we hand that out.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Sally Gordon. In our next conversation, we'll continue to talk about the Cody Brown case and how a federal judge referenced the Reynolds decision and said that it probably would turn out differently today.
The district court said Reynolds would not be decided the same way today, and the Tenth Circuit reversed. So that's a trial-level federal court, and then the intermediate level, it's called the Court of Appeals, and there are, you know, various circuits. This is the 10th one. I live in Philadelphia. That's the third one. Okay. So the 10th one reversed, and that held up. It did not go to the Supreme Court.
If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please subscribe to patreon.com/gospeltangents for just $5 a month. Patreon is spelled patreon.com/gospeltangents. If you'd like to watch the entire video, you can subscribe at YouTube, Patreon, or on my website at gospeltangents.com and click the yellow subscribe button for just $8 a month. PDF transcripts are just $10 a month, and you can get those on patreon.com/gospeltangents or on my website. I'll send those to you as soon as I've finished completing it. If you'd like to get a paperback and PDF, just subscribe for $20 a month at either Patreon or on my website. Individual paperbacks are available at Amazon.com. Just do a search for Gospel Tangents interview, and you can find all of our past interviews there. Show your Gospel Tangents pride by purchasing a t-shirt on our website at gospeltangents.com/shop. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. You can get our latest updates by friending me at Facebook, or you can also follow our page at facebook.com/gospeltangents. Become an insider and you can see the newest videos. Follow us on Twitter at Gospel Tangents. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some of our great videos. Thanks again.